When I grow up, I'm going to defeat the New World Order. It's Monday, August 5th, 2024. We now take you live to the front lines of the InfoWar.
We now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center and the heart of the resistance. You're listening to Alex Jones.
All right, Nick Fuentes joins us for the hour. I want him to give us a prelude of what he wants to cover first. I want to get into Iran, the stock market crash, the riots in England and Ireland, and just everything else he sees with the campaign. Nick, good to have you here. We appreciate your time and coming on. Where do you want to start?
Hey, Alex, good to be with you. Well, I suppose the best place to start is Iran. This is maybe something that we'll be seeing even in the next couple hours. Before the end of the day, major strike by Iran against Israel. So why don't we start there?
Give us your breakdown, and I'll show a B-roll of an artist rendering of a giant Iranian missile strike on Israel. Go ahead.
Sure. So as you know, and I'm sure your listeners know, we're now waiting for an imminent attack by Iran against Israel. It'll be the second of its kind, actually, in the history of both countries. First one was April 13th. And this is after a series of attacks and counterattacks this past week. Last weekend, there was a major rocket attack on the Golan Heights, killed about a dozen teenagers. And Israel retaliated by blowing up the political leader of Hamas in Tehran, killed the commander of Hezbollah in Beirut. And so now everybody, all eyes are on what this retaliation will look like. And I have a lot of confidence that this is going to be significant, like far more significant than the one in April. And I think we know that first and foremost because the timing is so much different. In April, Iran gave 2 weeks' notice. There was a 2-week lead time between Israel's attack on their consulate in Damascus and then the Iranian missile strike, which came on April 13th. This time, it's going to be a window of about 5 days, 5-6 days. Between Israel's attack and Iran's retaliation. The other thing that I think a lot of people aren't picking up on is that the United States will have forward deployed in the Strait of Hormuz 2 aircraft carriers, which I think speaks to the severity and gravity of the situation. And I talked a little bit about this on a Twitter space last night. I don't know how many people caught this, but when they reported the news of the U.S. deployment in the Middle East, they're, of course, moving a lot of defensive assets into the region, fighter squadron, 4,500 Marines. They also said, and this might have slipped a lot of people's attention, they said they've got one aircraft carrier, the USS Roosevelt, in the Strait of Hormuz already. They're moving in the USS Abraham Lincoln, another aircraft carrier, to relieve the Roosevelt, which is supposed to return to the United States. What a lot of people aren't realizing, though, is that means that there will be 2 aircraft carriers in the Strait of Hormuz just off the coast of Iran during or shortly after the strikes. And I think
could they be setting up a false flag?
I think so. I think it's very possible. And Iran has said that they're going to target anybody that is participating in the defense of Israel. Of course, the first time, the first strikes back in April, it wasn't just the Iron Dome and the David Sling. It was also the United States, Jordan, France, the United Kingdom. They all participated in shooting down the missiles. This time, Egypt just announced today they will not be supporting Israel. Saudi Arabia may not be supporting Israel. And Iran has said that they will target anybody that's involved. Does that include the United States bases in Iraq and Syria or Jordan? Could it involve the aircraft carriers in the Strait of Hormuz? I don't think it's totally outside the realm of possibility. So all signs, I think, point to a major, major escalation. And it's going to be far less easy to de-escalate this one or choreograph something where they can save face like there was last time back in April. So I think it's going to be absolutely major.
Well, that's right. In April, Iran said, we consider this matter done. But Israel escalated again, and I agree with you totally. Parking 2 aircraft carriers, the Strait of Hormuz, during this is asking for it. We'll come back in 60 seconds to elaborate on this with Nick Fuentes. Stay with us.
Let me take some brain force, and then we'll do this commercial. How about that? I can think again. This is the liquid tincture version of Brain Force, which means you can really tailor it to exactly what you need. I tend to take maybe a little bit more than is directed, but it's incredibly powerful stuff, and I have an incredibly demanding job. But you make it easy by going to InfoWarsStore.com, and of course, InfoWarsStore.com makes it easy by supplying me with Brain Force Ultra. I rely on this product to do my job on a daily basis because it's absolutely jam-packed with incredible ingredients. Brain Force Ultra is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com, and get it now because this stuff sells out fast for very good reason. It's a fantastic supplement. It's the type of supplement that once you start taking it, well, you're going to notice if you stop. Go check out what's in Brain Force Ultra. Do your own research, and what you'll find is that this is a powerhouse formula for incredible mental clarity, focus, and energy. Now on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. Brain Force Ultra, it's now on sale at InfoWarsStore.com.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
Well, Israel is saying, the Netanyahu regime, that they may strike Iran first. They think Iran's about to strike after the political and military leader of Hamas were killed. And we saw back in April the tit-for-tat that went on. Iran said they consider the matter closed. But now we're in election season. The stock market's crashing. Netanyahu's in political trouble. And so I agree with Nick Fuentes. If he just joined us, he was on last segment saying he believes it's going to be a major strike. They're saying the next few hours, the next few days. We're not sure. Nick, this is a big deal. Keep elaborating on this. And that key point you made, I want you to flesh that out. The United States is sticking two aircraft carriers right up against the shore of Iran, right when Israel is about to strike. And then even if Iran doesn't strike the aircraft carriers, we'll pull up a map of Strait of Hormuz for TV viewers. Could this be a USS Liberty repeat?
I think it's certainly possible because we know that Israel is not able to take on Hezbollah and Iran by themselves. They know that. We know that. And yet, I believe Netanyahu seeks to expand and prolong the war. The only way to prolong it is to expand it. And they can not even defend themselves against Hezbollah and Iran, let alone, you know, do any kind of offensive in South Lebanon, which is what they've been threatening. And so the function of whether this conflict goes on longer and whether it goes wider is the commitment and involvement of the United States. The Biden administration has been very reluctant to get involved. And they, along with other liberal governments, it's just true, they have been trying to restrain Israel, putting pressure by freezing some of the weapon shipments. Biden's been withholding 2,000 precision
bombs. And Netanyahu's
always
trying to suck us into war with Iran for 20 years. Iran's always 2 weeks from nuclear weapons for 20 years.
That's right. And Republican and Democrat administrations, Israel's tried to pressure every U.S. president, the last four U.S. presidents, to strike Iran. And this doesn't make any sense. This is hardly any different than Iraq. It's like you say, they're 2 weeks away for 20 years. And that's what they're saying now. And so I think that this is the go for broke. This is the once and for all war. This is how Israel sees it, where they're going to strike at the heart, which is Iran, and dismantle all of the proxies systematically. In order to do that, they need a total and unconditional and sustained commitment from the United States. And I think whenever that's required, it always involves false flags. The United States is not eager to get involved in another war. We're already stretched thin between our commitments to Ukraine and Taiwan. You can print money. You can't print anti-missile systems. You can't print anti-tank missiles, which is something the United States doesn't really even make anymore. And so between our commitment to Ukraine, anticipating a Chinese invasion of Taiwan, the last thing we need is a war in Iran or even a prolonged commitment to defending Israel. I think the only thing that gets America involved is an Iranian attack on American assets, something like we haven't seen yet, or a false flag in the United States or Europe. And I don't think Yeah, go ahead.
No, I totally agree. Keep elaborating that I've got a point.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, a lot of people, I think, realized when the Olympics started, there was this arson attack on rail. It seems like that totally went under the radar. But just before the Olympics started, before the opening ceremonies, they reported there was this coordinated sabotage attack, an act of arson against the high-speed rail in France, and it totally disabled the Olympics for the first day. And I saw that, and I've heard some of the rhetoric about Iran plotting a Trump assassination and other things. I don't think I'm the only one with the idea in my head that something's going to blow up. There's going to be some kind of mass casualty terror attack, just like, you know, you and I predicted the assassination attempt against Trump. There's going to be some kind of mass casualty incident. And in 24 hours, there'll be a media blitz. They'll know it's Hamas, it's Hezbollah, it's Iran. And that's going to be their pretext to get the United States involved. I think that was the play from the very beginning. And, you know, so far they haven't been able to get the United States to commit because there hasn't been a casus belli. With Iraq and Afghanistan, it was really 9/11, which propelled that authorization of use of military force and the global war on terror. But since there's been so much skepticism and distrust of the American regime ever since then, because of the mission creep and these endless two wars, Afghanistan just came to a close a couple of years ago, I thought it'd be impossible that they get us to war in Iran. Now it looks very likely, especially with all of the shooting and fighting that's going on. It's basically a series of proxy wars that have now gone hot. You know, Iran and
we're
going to
talk about that. So let me throw these points in the back of what you're saying. That's why I knew where you were going as you started to say it, because I was thinking the same thing and I wasn't asking about it. Because it's history. We're looking at the same thing here. You have the Lusitania getting sunk that got the U.S. into World War One, which was all staged, and it came out that it was really a flagship of the British Navy, and the Germans had bought ads in the newspapers for months saying, don't sail on this, we're going to sink it. Then it sailed back and forth in front of the U-boats to get, you know, sunk. And then, of course, you have the sinking of the Maine before that, 1898, to get us into the Spanish-American War and Havana Harbor and all of that. And then you have, of course, the Gulf of Tonkin event that never happened to get us into Vietnam in 64. You have the USS Liberty with LBJ in control of that with Israel trying to sink the ship to blame it. But the ship stayed up, so they couldn't do it as another pretext for full war. And I interviewed Admiral Moore and the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the guys that were the head of the JAG officers before they all died. So that I made films about it. That was on record. They saw the records. And they would call up and say, our ship needs help. And LBJ said, it's not taking away from what Israel did. It's saying they're working with LBJ, probably also to kill Kennedy. But the issue is that's where we are. And so to parade these aircraft carriers back and forth off the coast of Iran, when Iran gets struck, is just begging them to a provocation. Iran might be smart enough to not attack the aircraft carriers, but I think from past history and past action being the clearest indicator of future action, that... I mean, hell, Biden's controllers have nukes on those aircraft carriers. They'll just activate one by satellite and nuke it and say the Iranians did. Now, I'm not saying that will happen. I'm just saying that's a scenario. I agree with you that with the whole world going into this crisis and the globalists in so much trouble, war is always the main dish they try to serve first, then pandemics, then financial collapse, cyber attacks, and all that's already rolling out and being beta tested right now, Nick Fuentes.
Totally right. And putting our aircraft carriers there, it is an invitation. It's an invitation for the interested parties to drag us into the war. And I don't understand. I mean, of course, you know, the argument nominally, ostensibly, is that those aircraft carriers are there to deter Iran. And from a military point of view, that sort of makes sense. Iran may not want to escalate the conflict. If there's two aircraft carriers, the signal is clear. We'll bomb your oil and gas fields. We'll bomb your nuclear complex. That's clearly the message. What it does, though, in effect, and as you know, based on history, is that it puts the United States, it situates us right in the middle of conflict where, you know, for example, where Israel wants the United States to go and assist them in this campaign, it's a perfect target. It's painting a target on our back that says, attack us, please bring us into the war. And it's like you say, these sort of suspicious things happen all the time. There was a lot of funny business during the Trump administration where ships were blowing up in the Persian Gulf, in the Strait of Hormuz, after the Iran nuclear deal was ripped up, escalating the situation.
Yeah, but let's just go back to Operation Praying Mantis and blowing up other ships. But if you go back further than that, or after that, 9/11, we know that was an inside job. So it looks like they're teeing up a new 9/11.
Precisely, because that's how it works. You can't go to war without the pretext. You can't go to war without the excuse, the big false flag attack. And I think that's what they're setting up. Israel clearly has designs on Iran. And make no mistake about it, this is not about October 7th, which was a tragedy. It's not even really about Gaza. What this whole thing is about is the regional balance of power. And Israel recognizes, as well as Saudi Arabia and the United States too, that as long as Iran exists in its current form, if it is unleashed from the sanctions regime, it will compete with these other powers. Iran has a huge population, a big middle class, good universities. They do have a nuclear program. They've got oil and gas. If they're unrestrained from the sanctions, which is what the Obama and Biden regime would do, there would be a competition in the Middle East.
And if you go to Brzezinski,
that's actually in America's interest.
And if you go to Brzezinski political science, Iran is at the center of the chessboard.
That's right. That's right. It's the global, it's the world island, right? There's the world ocean and the world island, and Iran being centered in the middle of all of it is the key to dominating the three continents, Eurasia and Africa. And so that is why all these neocon planners, that's the final plan is regime change. And I think it runs through a false flag in the United States or in the Strait of Hormuz or any of these U.S. military assets.
Well, man, I mean, let's just say it. If the West nukes Iran or goes to full war, they won't have to stage false flags. Iran will activate their sleeper cells.
That's true. That's true. There will be, I'm sure, some of that. And with this open border, you know, there's bound to be people inside the United States that have infiltrated. And I don't think people are prepared psychologically for this. Is not 20 years ago. This is not the unipolar moment. Would the United States even win a war against Iran? I think that's actually an open-ended question, you know, and it's just sort of like when Russia invaded Ukraine. There was this idea that they would steamroll Ukraine in a matter of days. Obviously, the situation's a little bit different. But 20 years on, I don't think the United States has the same competence. I don't think it has the same relative advantage in military size. If the United States engages Iran, we have to recognize we'll be engaging Iran on many, many fronts.
That's
we'll
right.
be engaging them at home. We'll be engaging them in Iraq, in Syria, in Iran. We'll be engaging them in the Persian Gulf.
Well, that's right. In the 1980s,
it'll be a war on our economy.
In the 1980s, Iran-Iraq-U.S. proxy war, Iran was in Iran. They got smart. They're everywhere now.
That's right. They are. They're in every country in the Middle East. It would be a full scale. That's why it's not even fair to say it's a war. It's a conflagration. It's going to be a full-on regional conflict. I don't think people realize the scope of all of this, and especially the effect it'll have on the economy. That's why it brings in, you know, the stock market crash that was precipitated what we saw with the Japanese stock exchange this morning. NASDAQ on Friday, biggest crash in the NASDAQ today. What happens when all of the world's major oil producers are engaged in an all-out regional conflict? What happens when there's no trade going through the Strait of Hormuz or through the Red Sea? You know, when there's no trade going through there and there's no oil, we're already in an energy crisis. That's why Biden opened it up with Venezuela
and
Iran,
economic,
to reduce pressure.
It'll trigger what the left wants, a carbon lockdown.
That's right, 100%. And it's going to blow up energy prices. Inflation's going to blow up. This soft landing they try to manage with inflation is not going to happen. It would be a total economic meltdown. And so that's the situation. I think there's a little bit too much overconfidence on the side of the United States. Israel's not thinking about this. They're thinking about themselves. They're thinking about, you know, their strategic interest. But the United States just needs to say no. The United States needs to tell Israel, you know, Biden allegedly in a phone call, according to Axios, called up Israel and said, hey, this was extremely provocative, these two assassinations, and the next time you get in trouble with Iran, we're not going to back you up. Why didn't they say that this time? They should tell Israel this time, we're not going to back you up, because it's this moral hazard. It's this blank check we've given them, which has enabled Netanyahu to be as aggressive and as expansionist and as provocative as he wants, as suits him,
and
because he knows that we're going to be there.
I want to be clear. This is not a defense of Netanyahu. I don't have a dog in that fight. But it's important to point out he's not even popular in Israel. He's doing this because he's in trouble. So this is literally for a politician in his party putting us on the edge of World War III, because we forgot one point. Russia said 2 months ago they will come to the aid of Iran in a war. They have a defense pact with them and North Korea and China. So give us your view on that.
Well, you're right. And a lot of people put all the blame on Netanyahu. They don't realize that if Netanyahu were replaced, the next prime minister would probably be even more right wing than him. You know, so this is something institutional that's going on in Israel. And it is true, there is a broader balance of power politics that is going on. But the United States has to restrain these leaders, because I agree with you. If Netanyahu, if he declines to expand the war, he's toast. His governing coalition, which is made up of members of the Knesset who are far more right wing than him, they're going to pull the plug on his coalition and they will get a more willing prime minister. So, you know, there is something going on in the state of Israel. The left has been totally evaporated there. Some people think that's a good thing. I think it actually makes the region less stable. And so they're dead set on a conflict. At the same time, there are a lot of Israelis, like you say, they don't like Netanyahu. They want the hostages to be brought home. I think a lot of them are scared as well. The more right-wing ones, they want to go to war in South Lebanon. They want to go to war in Iran. It's going to be catastrophic for everybody involved. It's going to destroy Lebanon. It's going to destroy Iran. Israel will be wiped out. You know, the irony is I get accused of being the anti-Semite. Israel gets wiped out if they go to war with Iran and Hezbollah. 150,000 missiles raining down from Hezbollah.
This reminds me of Germany going to war with everybody in World War II. I mean, if you just sit back and look at it, clearly at the end, Israel's not going to win this. And I don't understand the desire to go to full war. It's insane.
It is. It is absolutely insane. And it's this, I do believe that this right wing of Israel, they've gotten a little bit too confident. They're a little bit too extreme. I think there are some perverse incentives that have been established. And I don't think they realize what they're in for. In 1973, they came to the brink of being destroyed. And that's when the prime minister of Israel threatened the Samson option. You know, she called up Nixon, Golda Meir, and she said, if we don't get backup from the United States, we're going to nuke the Middle East. And they've become less and less ambiguous about their nuclear capability, especially in this conflict. They've basically said outright, it was implicit before, they're saying explicit now, we are going to nuke everybody.
And by the way, the whole world would turn against Israel 10,000 times worse than they have over Gaza. Like, what kind of thought is that?
It's just this fever that they've got going on there. They want this war so badly. They're so aggressive, so expansionist. And I think there are some people in that regime, they actually think it's a good idea. And, you know, other people have commented on this. Douglas MacGregor, John Mearsheimer, they've all said it's not outside the realm of possibility that Israel deploys a tactical nuclear weapon in Lebanon, back against a wall, overwhelmed by conventional military means, by missiles, anti-missile system fails, and they deploy the unthinkable. And maybe it's a very, very small device. You know, they say it's a 5 kiloton nuclear weapon, something smaller than Hiroshima or Nagasaki. But the idea is that Israel is so paranoid, they're so histrionic about these threats, they perceive their back as being against a wall when really it's in a way a lot of their own doing, that they might do the unthinkable and deploy a weapon. And it's like you say, in their mind, they think that establishes deterrence. They think that means that people won't mess with them, but they've lost the forest for the trees. They're turning even their Arab allies against them. They're pushing Saudi Arabia closer to Iran. They're pushing Egypt closer to Iran. It's like earlier I said, it was announced today, Egypt said they will not move against Iran. It's unprecedented.
Yeah, since when is the Muslim Brotherhood lined up with the Shiites? So give us your prediction. You're a smart guy. People can disagree with some of your views, and I do with some of them, but some of them, a lot of them I agree with. I think you're being genuine in what you say you believe, and I think a lot of it's true. How's this play out then? What do you think? When do they hit? Today, tomorrow, next week? Does Israel hit first? I mean, how fast does this go to the races? Then how does Russia respond?
Well, it has been discussed that Israel is considering a preemptive strike. I don't think that will happen, although it could. I think that Iran is going to hit today, tomorrow, or Wednesday. Iranian Foreign Ministry said we'll hit before Wednesday. I think it will be severe. They're saying it's multi-day. They're not telegraphing it in advance. It's dubious if the United States can bring together that defensive coalition from April, which involved all the neighboring countries and France and the United Kingdom. So I think there will be some damage. I think there's going to be casualties. I think there's going to be damage. You know, even in April, when Iran heavily telegraphed the attack, 10% of the projectiles still got through and they hit their targets. So if that happens this time over a multi-day period, and then there's some sort of aftershock from Hezbollah, we're talking about serious damage. Israel can't ignore that. Israel will then engage Iran. Israel will engage Hezbollah. And I think their strike on that port in Yemen was a bit of a warning signal. Yemen is further away from Israel than Iran, and they struck a major port in Yemen with airstrikes. They say not with the help of the United States. The United States claim they help, but the suggestion was we can hit targets that far away. If we can hit that port, we can hit Iran. So it could potentially be a direct airstrike on Iran. And if that happens, then it's totally open season. I think at that point, the United States gets involved and there's a de-escalation, just like there was in April. But I think if you look, it's sort of like the sinusoidal curve. But the trajectory is clear. It's pointing upward. You know, back in April, they were able to choreograph an exchange of fire. It de-escalated quickly. Israel didn't reply to Iran's strike. This time, Israel will hit back. Iran is going to be bigger. Israel's going to hit back. I don't think this is the be-all, end-all, but I think the timing is all converging on this election. And so I think shortly before
point.
The election or shortly
about,
after.
This is all about the election, so tie it into that.
Right. So with the election, you know, Trump is going to get in, and I like Trump. I prefer that Trump would win this election, although I've been very critical. But Trump has been very clear, and it's actually been disturbing to me and sad to see. Trump put out a message on Truth Social a week ago, and he said, well, if the reports are true and Iran tries to kill me, they should wipe Iran off the map. And that's like an invitation for John F. Kennedy. That's like an invitation for RFK saying, hey, if I die, then Israel gets everything it always wanted. OK, well, guess what's going to happen next? So I think it's all building towards this election where either you get Trump and Vance, and they, of course, have the Israel lobby behind them, or you get Kamala, and she's announcing her VP tomorrow. They say the favorite is Josh Shapiro, who served in the IDF. He denies it, but I think it's true. And he's obviously pro-Israel Jewish. So it looks like either way, whether you get Trump or Kamala, and it's going to be a toss-up. I think at this point, odds are on for Kamala. I think with rigging, the polling, the betting markets, I think she's the favorite at this point, sadly. You know, they've sort of Trump has lost a lot of the momentum he had. And I think this is when Israel drives the United States into a quagmire. They take advantage of the chaos, instability. You know, Biden's out to lunch. There's no independent will in the White House. It's going to be during the transition. And I think that's when Israel's going to strike because they know there will be no will in the United States, no leadership to restrain them. There'll be nothing to resist. And I'll say in defense of Obama, you know, when they wanted the United States to get involved in the Syrian conflict, Obama played along. He drew the red line. And then when there was that hoax about chemical weapons, Obama did pull us back from the brink. You know, Obama pulled us back. Trump came in and changed the policy in 2017, ended the regime change policy, and we were out of Syria. We
good.
Still have a troop presence. You know, but
so,
there
so
was
let me
a
ask
will
you this.
When
how yeah, do we ahead. How do we stop this? Because I agree that's where we're going. I think it's excellent analysis. We're like driving the car over a cliff. How do we stop it?
Unfortunately, I don't think there's much that can be done. I think that there's so much disinformation on social media. I think it's almost impossible. You know, I've tried to put up the brake lights on this. I've tried to put up the warning flag since October 7th. And there's this, and it's very, I think, pernicious. On the right wing, they're almost employing a version of the Southern strategy where when there are anti-war protests, you get all these right wingers that say, oh, well, those are all third worldists. These guys are like BLM. These guys are all anti-American. And, you know, in a sense, there's a half truth in there. The greatest lies have a half truth. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of the BLM people are at these anti-war protests. At the same time, these anti-war protests probably would retard the involvement of the United States in the conflict. The boycott against Starbucks and McDonald's is working. I was skeptical, but it is. And so you have an anti-war left that is being attacked by the right. And then within the right wing, if you try to criticize Trump like Kyle Rittenhouse did, and I'm not a fan of his, but then people pile on and say, well, you have to vote for Trump. And there's sort of no room for disagreement. And I'm going out as a very right-wing guy, more right-wing than you. It's like you say, we don't even agree on everything. You're more libertarian. I'm more right-wing. But I'm out here because I'm not a GOP guy. I'm an independent. And I'm saying, where is the anti-war candidate that's going to pull us back from the brink?
Well,
it doesn't seem like there's leverage there.
Well, that's been a big plus about Trump is he's been anti-war. And you're right. Let's come back with what you just said. He agrees with Netanyahu. Netanyahu says, well, they killed Trump, you know. No, Trump just gave an invitation to the deep state, Israel, whoever, to kill him, to do this. If I die, vaporize Iran. He just walked into the trap I predicted on July 13th. I said they're going to blame Iran to kill Trump, and now he's walking into the trap. We'll be right back.
Nitric Boost. Turmeric 95. High-quality CBD gummies. It's all available at InfoWarsStore.com via the InfoWars MD line. Now, this is a private label of one of the top supplement makers in the country of high-end quality at reasonable prices. They let us private label their products. That's why you've already heard of Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula. Well, we got the 95% curcuminoid from them. This is just their brand of that. And so it is available under Turmeric 95. That's the name. So we're sold out of Body's, but we have Turmeric 95 that is, again, the same concentrated turmeric. Same thing with Nitric Boost. Nitric Boost came from this company. They even let us use their name. It's now our best seller. We sold out of our version. Their version has a white bottle. It's the exact same thing. You get it at InfoWarsStore.com. So check out InfoWarsMD at InfoWarsStore.com.
I would rather be oppressed by the Nazis.
Thank you. Hi, everybody.
I would rather just have some Soviet commissar with his boot on my neck and just saying, do what I say or die. And it's just like, ooh, okay, I get this. This is straightforward. Yes, sir. Please don't kill me. I prefer that over whatever this is.
Push for systemic change.
I would choose straightforward, manly oppression over this preschool baby talk.
As white people, we have a lot to learn and unlearn.
Just say you'll kill me. Just do it. Whatever this aesthetic, vocal fry, cat lady librarian bullcrap is, I don't like it.
It's for the greater good.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next.
Obviously, silver's doing way better than gold in growth, and it's way undervalued. That's a fact. Why then are the central banks mainly hoarding gold?
Well, because there's simply not enough silver, right? It's like if you've got central banks that start allocating into silver when it's $30 an ounce and they want to have it be part of their reserves, it's like, okay, there's not enough silver in the world to do that, right? So they have to do gold because it's $2,400 an ounce, not $30 an ounce. Right, so this is why
they've
central
got so many quadrillions
gold.
Of fake money. There's too much fiat to even buy the silver, which I would say then means silver still will always be the thing that grows the most.
Oh, so silver historically, the numbers prove out that when gold is in a bull market, which it is, we're near all time highs. Silver does better than gold, so silver grows faster, and there's a reason why. Silver and gold both act as barometers to government distrust, right? It's the worse things get, the better financial metals do. They're a flight for safety. But what silver has that gold doesn't is it's a manufacturing metal. It's used in industry. So in aerospace, in defense, in electronics, in solar power, electric vehicles, all of that. The demand for silver is through the roof, Alex, and we're just taking advantage of that. And imagine what silver will do with Trump being president, somebody who actually grows the economy rather than having a stagnant economy. The industrial need for silver is absolutely going to explode.
Now, you're right. Silver is the closest thing to a silver bullet. That's why they call it a silver bullet. People should go to kpm.com/gold right now and get silver now. We'll be right back.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones, coming to you live from the front lines of the InfoWar.
So we're really at the end of an age, a financial age, a political age, a geopolitical age, a fourth turning. And we're not up here, myself, Alex Jones, Nick Fuentes, trying to scare you. What Nick's saying is like dead on. I totally agree with everything he said, exactly what he said. It's better than I could say it. And this is real horror we're about to go into. And they're going to use these wars as the pretext for domestic crackdowns. They're bringing in the cashless society. The video we played last hour of the police arresting people for mild posts on Facebook and how imperious the police are. I mean, this is really, really, really creepy. So I get heartened by stuff on Truth Social by Trump. Voters have a choice, Trump prosperity or the Kamala crash, and Great Depression 2024, not to mention the probability of World War III if these very stupid people remain in office. Remember, Trump was right about everything. Except you said if you get killed, blow up Iran. Which, the day you said it, I went on air and I said, you just asked Netanyahu to kill you. And if you don't think Netanyahu's people would kill Trump in 2 seconds for power or any other big political corrupt group, you're crazy. I mean, Netanyahu is a total sociopath. And he's trying to maintain control. And you know, our government's run by a bunch of crooks, too. My issue here is that Trump's gotten smarter than 8 years ago. But still, statements like that, Nick, I want you to elaborate on that. That is just begging to get killed right there. That is begging for the deep state to kill you and launch World War III on the back of Trump. And he may think he's really important and he's invincible because that bullet grazed him. But I care about Trump. I want him to get in. I want to turn the country around. I know he's not perfect, but God almighty, stuff like that is just asking for it.
I had exactly the same thought when he posted that. And like you said, after the assassination attempt, that was the next thing they said. I think it was on the 13th. And then by the 15th, the FBI said, we have intelligence that Iran is plotting to assassinate Trump, which is obviously ridiculous. What happened in Butler, Pennsylvania had nothing to do with Iran. It's very suspicious. And there's a lot of questions. If it goes anywhere, it goes to DHS, it goes to the Biden administration and the deep state in the United States, but had nothing to do with Iran. And so when he put out that post, I'm thinking, what are you doing? That intelligence, this fake intelligence that Iran's behind the attack, I'm thinking that's obviously, we know what that's about. And then for him to go on True Social and say, oh yeah, well, if Iran takes a shot, nuke Iran. And
by the way, right after Netanyahu tells Congress that. I mean, call this digging your own grave.
That's what it looks like to me. And this is the history of presidential assassinations. You know, Jack Kennedy, just a month before he was shot, was telling the prime minister of Israel, we're not going to let you build a nuclear arsenal. And it involved the same thing, which is Israel's geostrategic concerns, which is all based around proliferation and containment of nuclear weapons. The guarantor of Israel's security in this bad neighborhood of the Middle East is their small nuclear arsenal. And the only emergent threat is the possibility that some other country would get a nuclear arsenal.
Well, let me just stop Iraq, you. This Syria. Is not a defense of Israel. And I've heard your theories, and probably before you were born, I'm not using that term, which is true. The old timer told me Israel killed Kennedy. And I'm what I learned from people at the table in Dallas week before they killed him was the oil companies, the banks, the military was mad he's pulling out of Vietnam. I was told Israel had people there pissed about him not wanting to. Israel had a seat at the table. And if Israel did it, I would blame it on them all day long. I'll blame it. You know, I go with the facts. But I just think the idea that Israel itself did it, I think it was a consortium of groups. But I do think the fact that he was saying no to nukes for Israel was probably maybe a cherry on top or pushed it over the edge.
I agree with you. A lot of people wanted Kennedy dead. I mean, there was no shortage of, you know, whether it's Cold War hawks or the mob or, you know, so I totally agree as a consortium. But you don't even have to go to JFK. I mean, just look at the history of Mossad's assassinations in Iran. They kill nuclear scientists. They assassinated leader of Hamas just the other day. And, you know, what's very interesting about that assassination, New York Times did a piece on how Israel carried it out, an exclusive. And they say that Israel planted explosives in an IRGC compound 2 months ago under the nose of the Iranians. And so I thought about that. And then you hear all these people that are skeptical of 9/11 and they say, do you really think it's possible that people were able to sneak in explosives into the World Trade Center and so on and so forth? It's like, yes, this is what they specialize in.
But it turns out there was a construction project right where the bombs went off for 3 months before.
In the elevator shaft, right, in the center of the building, because this is a very solid building, you know, not to get into it. But point being, these intelligence agencies, you can never apply Occam's razor. You know, people always say about things, well, the simplest explanations are most likely. When you understand what these intelligence agencies are capable of and how convoluted, sophisticated their plans are, it's almost the opposite. You have to assume that the least likely, the most convoluted is right. And so with the Mossad's history of assassinations and their stated desire, like we talked about earlier, for 20 years to impose regime change in Iran, for Trump to go out and say that after someone took a shot, after Netanyahu's speech in Congress, it is like he's digging his own grave. It's very strange to me. And it's like you say, I think in a lot of ways, Trump did get smarter. But he's also making a lot of the same errors that he made the first time. And you're right, Trump was anti-war. That's one of the things I like about him. And, you know, it's funny, when I talk to liberals, I defend Trump. When I talk to conservatives, I'm a little more critical of Trump. I talked to Michael Tracy on Glenn Greenwald's show last week, and he's trying to get me to disavow Trump. And I said, look, when Trump got in the first term, he kept us out of Syria. Everyone thought we were going to war in Syria. It was going to be Iraq all over again.
And then North Korea.
He ended regime change in his first 3 months. North Korea as well. Detente with North Korea. And, you know, Kim Jong-un says he wants to talk to him again if he gets back in office. And so there's a whole host of things that he did. But in his first term, he had people under him that were encouraging him to always do more, go bigger. They were lying to him about the troop totals, disobeying his orders to draw down the troop totals in Syria and Iraq.
Oh, yeah. They told him the troops were out. They told him the troops were out. I know you know this, but listeners might not. They told Trump the troops were out and they weren't out.
Right. Yeah, they lied for years. Then he told them, take us out of Syria. And they said right away. And they slow walked it and didn't take anybody out. And then he came back in 2019, take everybody out of Syria. They just abjectly refused. And they did it again.
So, Nick, let's do this.
Period,
let's do this the time we have. Finish your point. But I want to, when you finish your point, what is your, this will be an important video. He'll probably see it. You've had dinner with Trump before. What is your advice to President Trump? Finish your point about Syria and then give Trump the advice.
Well, the Syria thing's just an example, but I mean, as far as Trump is concerned in 2024, I think he needs to commit to not going to war in Iran. And I said it at Turning Point a few months ago. I've been saying it from the beginning. I'm an uncommitted voter. I'm very conservative. I'm white. I'm Catholic. I should be a Republican. I was a Trump supporter for 8 years. I'm uncommitted right now. But the thing that's going to get me to vote for Trump and turn out, and I think it's true of a lot of people, and even a lot of people in Michigan who are unlikely Trump voters, we need to be confident that there will be no war in Iran. So he said in his first term, I started no new wars. I'd like to hear a strong commitment, no new wars in the second term. And I know, you know, for some reasons, it's not a good idea because you need to have some flexibility conducting a foreign policy. You need to, you know, people need to think you might be able to, but it's too hot right now. The American people need to know that we're not going to war in Iran, no matter what the false flag, no matter what happens in the ensuing days. We need to know this is going to be a president that's America first and keeps the troops out of the Middle East. They should be anywhere other than there right now. So that would be my advice. And honestly, I think that wins the election. Because in a lot of ways, the Trump rhetoric is getting further and further away from the America First message in 2016. I like to say in 2016, he ran as an independent. Now he's running as a Republican. And it went from trade, anti-war, and anti-immigration. Now it's something like cutting taxes, more war, and energy. And it's not that I necessarily, I think the taxes should be cut. I think we should unleash energy. But the reason we invited Trump in and voted for Trump and everything is because he changed the consensus on globalization of trade, borders, and war. And if he can recommit to those things, then I'm all back on board and I'm bringing all the Groypers with me. And I think he wins it. I think he wins the Midwest. Otherwise, he's in trouble.
Well, again, it's not just a turnoff him saying, if I get killed, blow up Iran. It's a very stupid statement. And that was when I was like, as I was watching you attack Trump, going, oh, Nick's off the reservation, you know, saying he saw the convention and, you know, he doesn't like it now. And I was like, I get it. It's all pop and trying to get other people on board. But when I saw that, it was like a record skipping sound. I was like, whoa, Trump still has blind spots, man. That's like signing your own death warrant right there. If I get killed, World War III, you're asking me the detonator for this. This is insane. So the neocons, you know, of their day even tried to blame Russia for killing Kennedy, tried to get a full war out of that. And so it's just absolutely crazy. How do you see Ukraine and Russia decisively dominating? I see them about to push over the lines, which they could have already done. I don't think Russia should go any further. I think Russia should do whatever it can to try to get peace. But at the same time, the West doesn't want that. Where do you see that going? How does it tie into civil unrest that they're not going to just try to stir up here? They've already done overseas. What about all the other wild cards that are involved, Nick Fuentes?
Well, what's happening in Ukraine, it's turned into a war of attrition. And this is not good for the United States because we don't make this stuff anymore. It's turned into a real slog. You know, it's a stalemate. Well, it's not really. The Russians are obviously pushing through very strongly, but it's turned into a war of ammunition and shells and
guns. But that's always a famous Russian specialty, is to suck you in and then wait you out.
Right. Well, and Russia's a factory. You know, Russia is a factory. It's been a factory, and it's a meat grinder. They've got the population. They've got the resources. And so for the United States to get drawn into this, initially the thought was, well, we're wearing them down. They make more than we do. They make 10 times more than we do. We're not, if anyone's getting worn down, it's us. And here's the problem. We have commitments to it, basically every other country. We've got a commitment now to Taiwan. Used to be strategic ambiguity. For 60 years, it was a very careful policy where we would say, you know, well, we might defend Taiwan, we might not. And that was meant to install a tripwire, but not something so strong. It was meant to create a little bit of uncertainty in the Chinese. Now Biden says, if Taiwan is attacked, we're going to war with China. And we anticipate that'll happen in this decade. So we're committed to Ukraine. We're committed to Taiwan. Increasingly, as we just talked about, we're being drawn into Israel. And so increasingly, it's becoming a politics of these, the stock shelves of the United States military, and who's going to get the anti-missile systems, and who's going to get the missile batteries, who's going to get the finite supply of which we don't even make anymore. And they're trying to rapidly spin it up, but they're not going to be able to do it in time. So what they're going to do with Russia, if I think the Democrats remain in power, is that they're going to seek to escalate the war in Russia because we're not going to be able to maintain this attrition warfare. The Ukrainian line is very thin. They're running out of men. You know, they're having to draft older and older people and women and things like that.
Oh, no, you're dead on. Look, it collapsed a year ago. The Russians have just held back because they only want that security zone. Russia already won. Exactly. So you're right. NATO admits they want to escalate. The only escalation's direct conflict.
Right. I saw it. You talked about it on your show a couple weeks ago. It's the ladder by the RAND Corporation that leads to a nuclear war. We're 20 steps up that. We're right on the brink right there. And it's going to start with, we're going to give them longer and longer range missile systems. We're going to give them, as we have, authorization to strike into the interior of Russia. And then it's not a long time before American weaponry is killing tons of Russians. And then there's going to be a full-on conflict. And by the way, you know, if the United States is engaged in Iran, look at these supply planes that have been flying into Tehran for the past week. They're supplying Iran with anti-air systems, anti-missile systems, radar jamming. And they're also in Syria. Russians are deployed in Syria. Turkey is talking about getting involved in Israel. So when this whole thing blows up in the Middle East and Turkey has to go through Syria to get to Israel, they're going to be fighting through the Russians, a NATO country, maybe backed by the United States.
Top Israeli minister said, we'll Saddam Turkey. Turkey's got 10 times the size of military. They got the biggest, standard military in Europe and nuclear weapons. I mean, Turkey is like the old Constantinople. You don't want to go to war with the Turks. I mean, that's a whole nother thing. Like, they're probably worse than Iran.
Well, they can't even beat Hamas. They're struggling to beat Hamas, and now they want to fight Iran, Hezbollah, and Turkey all at the same time. It's not going to happen. And Turkey's a NATO country, so it's just a total disaster waiting to happen. And I think everybody recognizes, and you know, because you're a history guy also, this is the same kind of alliance building and the tripwire that started World War One and World War Two. It's all these commitments. America's.
I was about to say this looks like World War One and World War Two. Everybody's lining up. So how do we stop it? Because I got four children. I'm not one of these guys that wants to be in a war and thinks it's cool. I know you're not either. How do we stop this madness?
I agree. It's not cool. And, you know, I'm a young guy. I would get drafted. I'm going to have to go and fight or be locked up in a concentration camp or something here in America. But I think that we have to push for a policy of restraint. We need, because look, Trump is our best chance. I still believe that, even though I'm very skeptical. If Kamala gets in, it's going to be all out war. Trump is still our last best chance, but it's really now, just like it was in 2017, a battle for the Trump administration. And I hate that it's this way. It shouldn't be this way. But once again, it's going to be the real Trump loyalists and the real America firsters that are going to have to fight inside the Trump administration and wrest control back from the neocons. And so I think that the path to global peace, it's a policy of American restraint. I think the only one that can even do it is Trump, but the only way to get Trump to do it is to fight a battle within his team and within his future administration. He's got to win the election, but then when he wins the election during the transition, we need to get people in that are going to stop the war. If it's Rick Grenell and Nikki Haley, it's not going to happen.
No, I agree. What do you think of J.D. Vance? At least on the surface, he's anti-war.
I'm very skeptical of J.D. Vance only because of his connections. And, you know, I talked about this on your show before he was chosen. He was my pick to be VP because I had heard rumblings about this. And it's like you say, he says he's anti-war, but not really. I mean, if you listen to his statements, he's saying something very specific. He said, Ukraine is different than Israel. He said, I don't care what happens to Ukraine, but Israel we should still support. And he went to the Quincy Institute. Quincy Institute is a new think tank. They push American restraint. They're anti-war. Like, these are good guys. He went to this anti-war think tank and gave a speech about how we need to support Israel unconditionally. And this was back in June. This was in the middle, in the thick of, this was after Iran's strike on Israel. So for him to say that, I know he was vying for the VP slot and he got to appease the donor class, of which there are many pro-Israel types on the GOP side. But when I heard that, it's a very bad omen. And then you consider his connections to Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley's deeply entrenched in Israel. His benefactor, Peter Thiel, gave $15 million to his PAC to win the Senate seat in 2022. Half of Peter Thiel's net worth is bound up in Palantir. Palantir is a CIA contractor. That's how they started out. They did exclusively contracts with the CIA.
It's a surveillance.
Right. And they're involved in Israel doing the Lavender program right now.
But see, that's my issue.
They flew the whole board out to Israel.
Is I think the U.S. government is super corrupt and out of control. I don't blame the American people. I think the Israeli government's super corrupt. The British government, horrible. The German government, I mean, the Chinese government. But at the end of the day, I just don't. I know Israel has incredible power. It's involved in our business, and I'm a big critic. I just don't like make all policy point towards back that. I mean, you really think Israel is out of a pie of 100% influence over the U.S.? How much does Israel have influence? Like, what's your view? Because I don't know, but I mean, like 30%? You saying more?
I'd say it's very high. And I would have said less before October 7th, but you've really seen them exert their influence over the universities, over Congress. You know, it's like people always say, I make everything about Israel. And, you know, that's a fair criticism. But after the April attack against Israel, Republicans shut down Congress from October 1st until April 13th. They said, we're not going to give money for Ukraine until the Democrats agree to cut spending and do border security. But when Israel got attacked on April 13th, they split up the bills. They passed all the appropriations. Ukraine got their 60. Israel got their 28 billion. Taiwan got their 7 billion. It happened like that. And it's like, that's when it tells you that that's clearly their priority. You know, when Israel says jump, they say how high. You know, when Thomas Massie said that they all have their guy, and you're right, because I think you're absolutely right. The Chinese are a problem. They have infiltrated our country. You know, and I think, You know, a lot of my people say, well, you never criticize Israel, but you do. And you're, you know, maybe your people say, well, I don't criticize China, you know, but I do too. So you're right. It's a complicated world and there are different intelligence agencies and different interests.
And Israel is the biggest seller of our secrets to China. And I've always pointed that out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you've talked about the liberty and everything, you know, so nobody can accuse you of not, you know, not being forthright on those things. But the big concern for me is this thing with Iran. I think the Iran conflict, that's where it's being pushed the most with Netanyahu right now. This is a wild man. It's like you said, they're threatening to blow up Turkey. These people, they talk about the Iranians being irrational. They talk about the mullahs in Iran wanting an apocalypse. Well, if you're talking about going to war against Turkey and Iran at the same time, it sounds like you want the apocalypse.
Well, you do got to give it to Israel. I mean, they are very competent at assassination and sabotage and all this stuff. I mean, it's crazy. And my view is, let's not blow the world up, because I can see Israel getting destroyed in this. I don't have some hard on at night wanting to destroy Israel. At the same time, I see my family and my life, and I don't care who they are, neocons, liberals, conservatives, they want World War III. I don't like it. I'm tired of it.
Me neither. Yeah, it's going to be over for America. I mean, we totally forfeited all of this treasure that we had after the end of the Soviet Union. Like, we dominated the world after 1991, after the USSR collapsed. We squandered all of it with this financialization in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I do believe we have a chance to turn things around. People are always asking, is it too late? Are we too far gone? It might be, you know, but there's always wiggle room. I think that there is a chance that we could turn things around. But if we're involved in another 10 years in the Middle East, it's going to be really over for this country. We're way too overextended, and we will meet the same fate of other empires.
Well, I agree with you, and speak to this. The world loved America 50 years ago. It's still like this 20 years ago. The world hates us now. And a big part of it is the Middle East stuff and all the rest, and the exporting of all the pervert stuff.
it looks like the elites running things are doing stuff deliberately to undermine America. There's a real schizophrenia there. Can you speak to that?
I agree with you. It's true. 70 years ago, the Muslim world didn't have a problem with the United States. A lot of people don't realize that. The Islamic world didn't like Europe because of the Crusades and the historic conflict there between Christians and Muslims. But in the 20th century, the first half of the 20th century, the Muslim world actually liked America. And they were optimistic about America. And so was the rest of the world. But now you're right. Every other country is now chomping at the bit to get involved with China and get involved with BRICS. In Africa, they're waving the Russian flag in Nigeria. Like, doesn't even make sense. Like, it doesn't look like it makes sense. And so the United States is really in a bad place. And I think you're right. I think they are trying to undermine American power. And the thing is, it's just really a question of who the American power benefits. I think that the United States has been used as an instrument by a global ultra wealthy class for a very long time. And as such, they have let the reputation and the wealth and everything else, the sort of interior of the country, get depleted for their enrichment and for their wars. And I think that the reputation of the United States is just this casualty in everything that they've done. They wanted Iraq overthrown.
That's right.
They
we've been a power slave. We've been a battering ram for whatever special interest can get us.
That's a perfect way to say it. And our reputation has been the casualty. It's been collateral damage in their war. Because what was interesting is when Trump came to power, the world leaders actually kind of liked him. Like Kim Jong-un, who has every reason to be suspicious of and hate the United States, he actually thought Trump was kind of cool. And they were like hanging out. And I know people are skeptical of that, but it spoke to something. Trump represented to the world a breakthrough where now that you're getting the American people, instead of this blob, instead of this foreign policy, ultra-rich blob, Putin talked about that. Kim Jong-un recognized that. I think a lot of people recognize that. And now we've just been submerged back under the blob. So that's really the tension in the United States, because I think everybody recognizes the people are good. Even, you know, Maduro, Nicolas Maduro, another one who's been totally hated by the United States. He says, hey, the Americans aren't bad. It's these global special interests that are going and bringing the United States to war against us. And so that's really the adversary. And that way, I'm totally in agreement with you. I think most people are fundamentally good in the world. They're well-meaning, I should say. Maybe, you know, people are fallen, but I think people are well-meaning. But it is these global elites who are more powerful than ever in tech, in finance, and so on. And I think they're bringing the world to a very sad, impoverished, dangerous place, and it has very little to do with the people of the world.
Well, Nick, do 5 more minutes the next hour and I'll let you go, and we've got Gerald Celente coming up, and do 5 more minutes, because I want to ask you in closing about all the other little tidbits and things that you've got cooking and what you think is most important. But how do people find your show to actually hear what you actually say versus what the media says you say? How do they find it?
I'm on Rumble, and my username is Nick J. Fuentes. I'm on the air Monday through Friday, 8 o'clock Central, and I'm on Twitter, Nick J. Fuentes. But we'll do another 5 minutes. Sounds good. We'll talk about, we'll cook. We'll keep cooking.
Absolutely, because come back soon, we'll take calls, because it's good to have the forbidden people on the show. And by the way, there's been a new statement by Jamie Raskin. Well, we're going to come back and play that. Stay with us.
You've seen what President Trump has gone through in the last 8 years. And you've seen a lot of the things that InfoWars has gone through. And I want to thank all of you over the years for your word of mouth, your prayer, and your financial support, because without you, we would not be on the air. Now, without getting into a 2-hour-long story, in the process of the bankruptcy the last 2 years, we were basically sabotaged, and the people that were brought in here to supposedly run things didn't reorder product, even though there was plenty of money at the time to basically put this operation in a position of shutting down. But by the grace of God, years ago, I set up backup supplement line from one of the main providers of the raw materials we were using. And so many of these InfoWars MD products are actually our famous products, simply private labeled, and others are different formulas this company offers. They're all top of the line. They're already best sellers. They're already all over the market and in stores and online under other names, but they are all the very best. So this line is called InfoWars MD. Our supplements are basically all sold out. Only a few things are left, like X2, X3, and some of the other amazing products. But with InfoWars MD, you have Turmeric 95. That is the same formula as Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula. You have the nitric boost. It's so good for your heart cardiovascular system. It is the exact same formula. So our nitric boost is sold out. They have their nitric boost. They even let us use their name nitric boost a few years ago. So they're the original makers of this that Dr. Minkovich and others have talked about being one of the best formulas out there. So these are all really amazing products. You want to check out the line of InfoWars MD at InfoWarsStore.com, and it funds our operation. Get great products and help keep us on the air. I need you to take action. You will love these products. They work really, really good. No matter which one you try, they're already top of the line, tested, private label by us, available right now at InfoWarsStore.com under the InfoWars MD label. Thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.